Welcome to Fine Print, the double scrutiny of the story and its coverage with me, Amir Afrah. But first, as always, a quick check of the big print. The big print goes. Iran and IAEA and a latest round of nuclear talks. Report on Iran may scupper future sanctions. White House is confident of broad support on Iran. Olmert, U.S. will continue to spearhead campaign against Iran. Bush, Iran must explain hidden nuclear weapons program. Sarkozy hosts Netanyahu in Paris, backs new sanctions against Iran. Big power diplomats discuss new Iran sanctions. And major powers fail to agree on Iran sanctions. Help us track the fine print. We shall be shortly joined from London by Andreas Perspo, nuclear law and policy researcher at the Center of Verdict, an independent non-governmental organization. Its mission is to promote effective verification as means of ensuring confidence in the implementation of international and international agreements. From Washington by David McMichael, former CIA analyst, currently on the steering group for the Veterans Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. From New York by Azim Mian, UN Bureau Chief for GOTV Pakistan. But first, let's go straight to our first pick tonight, Iran and IAEA and the latest round of nuclear talks, and that by Reuters, Wednesday, December 12, 2007. The article goes, Iran and a team from a UN watchdog ended the latest round of talks in Tehran on Wednesday, aimed at answering questions about the Islamic Republic's nuclear work, an Iranian news agency said. Experts from the two sides held 3 days of talks as part of an August agreement to clear up suspicions about Tehran's atomic plans, the ISNA news agency said, without saying whether the meeting produced any results. The International Atomic Energy Agency delegation arrived in Tehran on Sunday less than a week after a U.S. intelligence report said Iran halted its nuclear weapons program in 2003. And, of course, the report, which is Iran's nuclear case at this point, could be divided before the report and after the report, according to many analysts. The report, now we have a national intelligence estimate, Iran nuclear intentions and capabilities, a report by the U.S. nuclear, that is, intelligence apparatus, 16 agencies, and here is what the report has to say. Scope note, it says, this international intelligence estimate, the NIE, assesses the status of Iran's nuclear program and the program's outlook over the next 10 years. And further down, the report says, key judgments, we judge with high confidence that in fall 2003, Tehran halted its nuclear weapons program. We also assess with moderate to high confidence that Tehran, at a minimum, is keeping open the option to develop nuclear weapons. We judge with high confidence that the halts and Tehran's announcement of its decision to suspend its declared uranium enrichment program and sign an additional protocol to its nuclear nonproliferation treaty safeguards agreement was directed primarily in response to increasing international scrutiny and pressure resulting from exposure of Iran's previously undeclared nuclear work. Now let's go straight to Washington, where we're joined by David McMichael, former CIA analyst. David, your take on this report, which caused a lot of stir around the world, and then on to the talks between Iran and IAEA and repercussions of this report.
Okay, well, the major repercussion, if you will, was that contrary to the statements being made by the Bush administration and being supported to a large extent by the EU countries and Great Britain, or backing the United States policy of against Iran, was a surprise and shock, really, that this report stated that, with high confidence, as you point out, that Iran had ceased any work on a nuclear weapons program back in 2003, that is 4 years ago. So this came across, I should say, if this current U.S. administration were capable of being embarrassed, as a great embarrassment to them, because it said that what they'd been claiming loudly and vociferously over the last several years was not believed to be so by the U.S. intelligence community. So the second thing that it caused was, and you referenced earlier, that the many of the world's industrial nations, the EU 5 plus 1, were meeting to discuss further economic and other sanctions against Iran if it did not cease its nuclear work. And this was directed particularly at Iran's resumed enrichment of uranium for the declared purpose of providing fuel for a nuclear powered electric program. So it has caused a great amount of controversy, obviously. Our Defense Secretary Gates was obviously very uncomfortable when addressing the Gulf State Conference at Manama in Bahrain last week. Certainly, the Iranian government has welcomed this report as showing, according to the Iranian government, that it has been telling the truth about its program all along. And so, on the other hand, and reaching out to say now is the time to the United States, we can resolve all our problems. And the response gets over the last few days from the Bush administration, from the White House particularly, has been very angry, demanding that Iran not be rewarded for doing what the international community, so-called, had been demanding in not having a nuclear weapons program, but that it be punished further because it hadn't revealed that program in a way which satisfied us. And as I say, the Iranian government continues to maintain, as it has consistently, that it does not now have a nuclear weapons program, nor did it have one in the past. And that's the big difference between the national intelligence estimate and the Iranian position, because they deny ever having one. And they point, among other things, to the fatwa issued in 1905 by the country's religious leaders, stating that nuclear weapons were non-Islamic and could not be possessed or used by an Islamic country. I'll leave it there.
Well, that was pretty much the case. I had an interview just a couple of days back with Dr. Ali Larijani, former Iranian top nuclear negotiator, and he rejected huge chunks of this report, calling it simply mischievous when it accuses Iran of having actually a nuclear weapons program prior to 2003, something even denied by the International Atomic Energy Agency. And, of course, also Russia pounced on a report and said there was no such program before this date. And let's go to New York, where we're joined by Azim Mian. Azim, I'd like to have your take, your read of this report, because this basically sets the premise from now on for any other discussions we have on Iran's nuclear program. Let's have your take.
Coming from the neighborhood of Iran, I mean the native country Pakistan, obviously this issue has been of a great concern to the Pakistanis, because we live in the neighborhood, and any kind of reprisals against Iran would have definitely affected us directly. So thank God, after this estimate, you know, that cloud is over, that cloud is clear, and at least Iran can breathe for some time though Bush administration, as David has said, has been very angry on this report, but it vindicates Iran, that Iran had no nuclear weapons, or she was not even making any effort to make the nuclear weapons. And they halted their program in 2003. That means even if they start, it's going to take them much, much longer time to make any kind of nuclear weapons. That's one thing. But on the other hand, Iran has also been very upfront about its sovereignty and has not been cooperating or has not been responding to the Bush administration the way Bush administration wanted. I do agree that a country is a sovereign country, but yet, to save yourself and save the international community, there would have been, I think, some cooperation that with the administration and with the IAEA, finally, which Iran did, and got a clean bill of health, that IAEA was also said that they don't have any nuclear weapons, but still, because of Iran's resistance to show and provide all the information, even IAEA came out. They said they don't have the weapons, but they cannot really say that they are not making the weapons. So it was, a kind of a mixed bag. I think Iranians, if they could have cooperated with the international community more willingly, this cloud of threat would have been over, some time back. But I'm glad at least in the region, once Iran has been vindicated, though it's a setback for the Bush administration, and it's a big setback for the Bush administration, because in 2005, Iran was accused of building up nuclear weapons. Now that threat is over, Iran stands vindicated, and that, I hope, that will bring some kind
All
of
right.
normalcy
now let's
in
go,
that region.
Right. Let's go to London, where we're joined by Andrea Perspa, nuclear law and policy researcher at the Center of Verdict, an independent non-governmental organization with a mission to promote effective verification as a means of ensuring confidence in the implementation of international and intranational agreements. Andrea, I'd like to have your take on this NIE, National Intelligence Estimate. We just went through this. And also, this talk of NPT, Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, because Verdict stands for international and also intragovernmental treaties. Now, whatever happened to that? And give us the new equations from your perspective, new dynamics, especially after this NIE.
Well, I think for us working these issues in London, for us this is just another example as to why multilateral verification is so important. I mean, what we have here in practice is one state just claiming a certain fact is a fact. I'm sorry, I can see myself, so I'm not a retard. It's just a bit of a delay there. Basically, the only thing in which you could ascertain the facts is by multilateral verification. What we have, as I said, is a piece of national intelligence. It has changed. We don't know what the basis is of that intelligence, where they're basing their estimate on. For instance, is it new signals intercepts, which I heard at a seminar today? Is it, for instance, defection? Is it a defector coming in giving new information? Do we have some other kind of information that leads this organization to these organizations? There are 16 various U.S. intelligence organizations to this conclusion. Remember in 2005, the question was this laptop that were uncovered mystically contained a lot of sensitive information. Apparently, the U.S. were reluctant to share it to the wider community, obviously, not wanting to reveal too much of their intelligence collection means and methods. At that time in 2005, as the previous speaker said, there was a clear indication, or at least a clear determination by the intelligence communities, that this information that they had right now proved that Iran was actively seeking nuclear weapons. Now, obviously, this has all changed. which just proves how unreliable that kind of information is. Also recall the basis for the war in Iraq. You were basically relying on a single source intelligence, a source called Kerbal, who had his own agenda as to what he said and when he said it, as to Saddam Hussein's intentions and what Saddam Hussein was after. Now, what is needed right now, what is necessary right now, and what Iran has signed up to do through you mentioned the non-proliferation treaty, but more importantly, their safeguards agreement with the International Atomic Energy Agency, is to afford the necessary transparency for the international community and the International Atomic Energy Agency to verify once and for all that there is no undeclared production going on inside Iran. This is, as you know, one of the major, I would say, outstanding issues still on the table. I think Iran could do more, and I'm sure Iran will do more. Iran has done a lot lately in terms of the work plan, but I just want to warn that a lot more is necessary for this kind of suspicions to dissipate. And, you know, the White House made its own interpretation of what this NIE meant. I mean, you will recall that Bush, and I'm not sure if the first speaker said so, basically used the intelligence assessment to prove his point. He said, well, prior to 2003, my intelligence agencies have now stated that they had a nuclear weapons program. And after 2003, well, there is only moderate certainty as to whether or not it actually suspended. I mean, the intelligence services are not so certain when it comes to whether or not Iran is doing right. Weaponization at the moment.
All right. Now, let's take a look at another part of the declassified version of this report. The original version is 140 pages. We just have a few pages declassified. And I'd like to go to David McMichael. First, here is key differences between key judgments of this estimate on Iran's nuclear program and the May 2005 assessment. In May 2005, there was another NIE, IC estimate, which says assess with high confidence back then that Iran currently is determined to develop nuclear weapons despite its international obligations and international pressure, but we do not assess that Iran is immovable. Of course, we had the assertions for this time around. Now, where does this shift, this about face basically come from, the sources of the report? Now, we have many like John Bolton, the neoconservative, saying, well, this is not shift of analysis, the shift is in policy rather than analysis. And other analysts saying, well, right now we have cooler heads prevailing in Washington, and as a result of that, here is this report. Now, as an ex-CIA analyst, how do you see this? And how do you see this as reflection of the 140 pages? What's the origin of this? What's behind the NIE?
Well, what's behind it is always a request from to make a national intelligence estimate, and I've worked on a couple in my time. It's a request from the executive branch to deal with, and because it's a national intelligence estimate, it's something considered a very high priority to the decision makers. So they want this national intelligence estimate. And I can tell you again that the process, and we saw this certainly in the production of the October 2002 national intelligence estimate on Iraq's so-called weapons of mass destruction, a very highly politicized process in which, and this happens in any bureaucracy, you don't reach the high levels in the intelligence system or in any place else if you're constantly contradicting the opinions of the boss. And this is unfortunately a factor. As a matter of fact, just to consider things currently, our current Secretary of Defense, Mr. Robert Gates, was initially turned down in his first time attempted to appoint him as a director of Central Intelligence precisely because he had a reputation, and a well-deserved one, I may say, for bending too easily to what the higher levels wanted to hear. So that's a part of it. Some of my colleagues currently with the Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, and putting intelligence and sanity together raises a question, but the have regarded this report as a renewed declaration of independence by the intelligence community. And certainly the principal drafter of this National Intelligence Estimate, Thomas Fingar, who comes out of the State Department's BNR, their Bureau of National Intelligence Research, his organization was the one that fought hardest against the original erroneous Iraq National Intelligence Estimate. So this is looked at as a sort of a vindication. But one of the other speakers, and I think you yourself noted, that intelligence is a chancy prospect. I would like to address, if I may, this critical point here, which you all have. This estimate says, just very quickly, this estimate says Iran did have a nuclear weapons program, and it denies that it did, so therefore Iran is still lying and it needs more pressure. I think if you want, I can tell you what I think that nuclear weapons program was. I think it's solid.
Right, David, hold on to that note. We'll be back after just a few moments of headlines with more of Iran's nuclear program, IAEA Iran meeting inside Iran. Don't go away. We're back with Fine Print, discussing the latest twists and turns in Iran's nuclear program, this time around with the International Atomic Energy Agency experts inside Iran, talking to their Iranian counterpart. Joining us to track the fine print, the elusive prints, we have from London, Andrea Pershbo, nuclear law and policy researcher, Center of Verdict, an independent non-governmental organization. Its mission is to promote effective verification as a means of ensuring confidence in the implementation of international and international agreements. From Washington, we're joined by David McMichael, former CIA analyst, currently on the steering group for the Veterans Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. From New York, by Azim Mian, UN Bureau Chief for GOTV Pakistan. Let's pick up where we left off. David McMichael in Washington. Earlier in the dying moments of the first half of our show, you alluded to one very important fact, and that is another accusation set forth by this report that Iran halted its nuclear weapons program back in 2003, basically saying Iran did have a nuclear weapons program. This is the first time around that we have this laid out again by Washington, of course, categorically denied in Iran by each and every official. And also we had the Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov earlier speaking after a NATO meeting with Condoleezza Rice, U.S. State Secretary, that, well, where he said, no way, this report just tells us that we've been true all along, that there is no sign of a weaponization program in Iran's peaceful nuclear program. And also Lavrov there and then told Rice that we did know that Iran never had a nuclear weapons program to begin with. If you'd like to elaborate on that, go ahead.
Yeah, this is purely speculation on my part. Obviously, I have no access to the information that was used by those who prepared this National Intelligence Estimate, but they did. At the time it was released, National Director of Intelligence McConnell said that this information that the program had been abandoned was based on intercepted conversations with military officers, which interested me a lot. And this is why I analyze this, is I am reasonably certain that Iran, just as at least 50 other countries, members of the United Nations, the IAEA reporters, have had in the past nuclear weapons programs. Almost all of these, and I'm familiar with at least two in the Western Hemisphere, involved military staff studies. and exchange of information, the usual sort of thing. Should we have these? Could we have these? Would it be beneficial? What are the cost benefits and so forth? And that this went on, and that this, you know, at a certain point, the Ministry of Defense would say, okay, that's the end of the staff study, put that in the file. And one should also point out, in terms of timing of this, is the issuance, and it was made public in 2005, of a fatwa, that is a declaration by the highest religious authorities in Iran, that possession or use of nuclear weapons was not un-Islamic and could not be permitted. And however, you know, much credit one wishes to place in that statement, when the religious leaders in Iran say something that appears to us threatening, we always say that that must be the truth. But my guess is that when the full examination is made as to of what this quote-unquote military program consisted, it would be more in the staff study area than in any attempt to purchase, to smuggle, to employ nuclear weaponry of any sort. That, as I say, that's my speculation, but it is based on some experience.
Now let's see about the reactions. It's, of course, right after the report, which was ordered basically by Harry Reid, the Democrats' leader in the Senate. Well, the Democrats' counseling report, they said, we've said it all along, the administration's Cynthia Rushing to confrontation with Iran after Iraq, and it's deja vu all over again. Around the world, a lot of stir was caused by this report. And we had the neoconservatives inside Washington, like John Bolton, saying it was a matter of politics and not really analysis. And they started kicking and beating this report and knocking it all they could. Of course, we had reaction from Israel. We'll get to the details, but let's take a look at what Bush had to say. Here's a CNN article. Bush, nucleus Iran remains dangerous. And this is Bush's reaction to this. And here's what he said. Iran was dangerous. Iran is dangerous. And Iran will be dangerous if they have the knowledge necessary to make a nuclear weapon. Bush said, pointing out that Tehran continues to try to enrich uranium for civilian purposes and therefore develop technology that could be used for a weapon. Andrea Pershbow in London. Now, the goalposts seem to have been shifted dramatically, especially on U.S. part. While these negotiations in Europe between Solana and Dr. Larijani at one point, and now between Jalili and Solana are just going on, and we have IAEA meetings with Iranian officials trying to resolve the remaining questions on Iran's nuclear program, whether it's peaceful or not. On the other hand, we have George W. Bush simply saying that Iran does not have the right to have the technology or know-how or capacity for a nuclear program, even if that's peaceful, because of fears that we have. Now, what's your judgment on that?
Well, I think that it's interesting how you can change opinion of 16 intelligence agencies based on the result. I'm sure that if Mr. Bolton had read the report and it said that Iran has currently a nuclear weapons program, he would call it, you know, an undeniable fact. Now, but I just want to add to what the previous speaker said about the weaponization efforts and so on. I mean, in early 2005, 2006, we commissioned a study written by one of our then staff members on how you could detect weaponization activities. And we define weaponization activities in the narrowest of sense. We're talking about the kind of experiments you're doing when you already have the fissile material and you're putting it together into a working weapon. Now, we concluded that that would be very, very difficult to detect if you could ever detect it. There are, of course, certain techniques you could employ, which, to be fair, already are employed to a certain degree by the International Atomic Energy Agency. So basically, what kind of evidence do you require when it comes to whether or not Iran has a nuclear weapons program? If you're looking for the smoking gun and you define the smoking gun as a weapon stashed in the basement of the Supreme Leader, well, you're not going to find that. But you know, if you have a less stringent criteria, then maybe you will be able to find that, such as, for instance, hydrodynamic testing. I won't go into the details. But the point is that Iran in the past has, as has many other countries, I mean my own, Sweden actually had a nuclear weapons program in the 1950s and 60s. Iran has conducted some activities which has raised suspicions, and this is uncontroversial. Iranian diplomats say this themselves, which I would say puts the emphasis on Iran to provide the kind of transparency that is necessary. And I know that if there were an Iranian diplomat in the room, he would say, well, we've done that. We've given an unparalleled number of inspection hours in the past, and yet there are new questions, and yet no one is happy with it. Now, yes, that is true. Iran has been a very exceptional case, but Iran should continue to be an exceptional case for at least a while forward. Now,
but,
once you
but Andrea, the question here is, well, Iran did suspend its nuclear peaceful nuclear program for 2.5 years, which was a measure of goodwill, contrary to its agreements, basic agreement with IAEA. They had a separate contract under the NPT, which in that contract it says that IAEA has no right whatsoever for verification matters to suspend Iran's nuclear program. But Iran did that for 2.5 years. And just a couple of weeks ago, we had Iran's ambassador to the IAEA, Ambassador Soltani, is saying, we are ready to suspend, but the point is, it's never enough with the United States of America. They want more and more and more. And this is basically it. The question now is not simply stopping or, let's say, suspending Iran's nuclear enrichment activities, because on the other hand, the United States is simply shouting, Iran does not have the right to have the technology or capacity to make to have a full nuclear program. Why? Because, well, we have suspicions that this way or that way, Iran might at some point develop nuclear weapons. Is that illegal? Because you're an expert on international and international agreements. Do you think that stands, that holds water, legally speaking?
No, legally speaking, I mean, all countries have the right to pursue nuclear energy within the framework of the NPT. This is actually not a NPT-derived right, as is often said. It is rather a sovereign right. I mean, for instance, just a simple example to illustrate that. If it were illegal to acquire nuclear energy under without being a member of the Non-Proliferation Treaty, well, then it would be illegal for India or Pakistan or Israel to acquire nuclear power. Now, no one is saying that that India's nuclear power is illegal. No, no. This is. I think you're just precisely to the point, because the point is that simple. What you have is a situation where one state, the United States, and I tell this to my Iranian colleagues as well, probably will never take an Iranian declaration seriously. They will always find something to pick about. But keep in mind that there are many states that are undecided at the moment, many of them in the Western camp, but also if you speak to Russian colleagues, they say, well, okay, this is the policy of my country, but, you know, in an ideal world, we would want Iran to come forward again, showing the kind of same cooperation that they showed in 2004, 2003, and early 2005. And, you know, there are still questions that need to be resolved, and that's simple as that. I mean, Soltani, a charming man, met him. He has a point when he says that you know, we've afforded that kind of cooperation in the past. And, you know, I think the work plan that is now underway is a good step forward. But me personally, I don't think it's
Andrea, enough. But again, let's go to New York. But first, look, NIE comes on the heels of a report by the International Atomic Energy Agency, once again, shouting out clear that, hey, look, everyone, lo and behold, there is no sign whatsoever that Iran is pursuing a nuclear weapons program. And then we have the NIE saying, well, Iran does not have a nuclear weapons program. But it's not about that. The United States basically says that Iran does not have the right to have the technology or know-how. These are the key words now, technology and know-how. So they're not even talking about enrichment, suspension of enrichment anymore. They're talking about suspension of technology. That basically means, well, you put it on the back burner, and all right, 10 years from now, 15 years from now, when do you have the right to come back when we're talking technology here? Now let's go to New York. We're joined by Azim and Mian. Azim, here is, let's take a look at what's happening on the ground. Now we're not talking treaties anymore because it's not a world of treaties. It's a world of five powers deciding, getting together. And if Iran's nuclear case is on the back burner for now, it's all thanks to disagreements coming from China and Russia, really hard to get on board after Al-Baradei's report. And even right now, all the harder to get on board. And I'll read a few snippets of what Sergei Lavrov, the Russian foreign minister, had to say. But I'd like to have your take on the future of sanctions with the facts on the ground as it is.
Talking about legality and right, first of all, I'm totally against, personally speaking, I'm totally against all nuclear weapons. And secondly, NPT is a very discriminatory kind of an treaty which only gives, nuclear power, which grants and recognizes nuclear power only to the five countries. And these five countries have also developed their nuclear weapons by, borrow steel and all those clandestine kind of operations. Now, the NPT is an exclusive club, and they want to take the rights from the other countries, for their defense, number one. Secondly, how come these five countries, whatever nuclear weapons they have, are they going to shower flowers, or are they not, destructive for the world? And secondly, while signing the NPT, all these countries agreed that they will mutually reduce the nuclear weapons. They have not done that. These five NPT members, they have not reduced their nuclear weapons, which was their obligation. How come we can call others to fulfill their obligations or telling them that they don't have the right while we have not, the NPT countries, have not fulfilled their obligation? That's one thing. And secondly, reduction and elimination of the nuclear weapons will bring peace to the world. Otherwise, if somebody is holding a gun and I don't have a gun, that means I'm a victim of somebody's, power, number one. Number two, then if these five countries possess nuclear weapons and they don't reduce, that means everybody else who is non-nuclearized country will face the threat of, these nuclear powers. Likewise, now India has developed their nuclear weapons, Pakistan has developed, and still they are not being taken into the NPT despite their declaration that they are going to, use these nuclear weapons only in their self-defense. And these five countries are going to do the same thing. But still they are not being allowed to enter the NPT. So the question of legality, legal matters are only when it applies equally all across the board, not only to an exclusive club.
Now, as this NIE came out, just a few days after that, we had U.S. Defense Secretary Robert Gates in Bahrain on a PGCC meeting, repeating all the accusations and allegations leveled against Iran, from the support for militia in Iraq to Hezbollah and Hamas to its nuclear program. And surprisingly, Gates repeated the U.S. support for Israeli nukes and supported that. Now, we have a few articles here from JTA, Jewish Telegraphic Agency, breaking news, of course, back in the 8th of December. It goes, Gates defends Israeli nukes. And after that, we have from Reuters, Israel, no nuclear threat to neighbors, says Gates. Gates takes a hard line on Iran, Los Angeles Times. Associated Press, Gates urges Gulf nations confront Iran. Gates calls for anti-Iran missile shield, ABC News. Iran threatens Mid East, U.S. says, BBC. Guardian, Iran remains potential threat, Gates warns. Gates says Iran seeks to cause chaos, so on and so forth. Now, particularly the part that had to do with Israeli nukes drew large laughter from the audience, bouts of laughter. Now, David McMichael, now we have the NPT right now. There's no talk of that except for Iran saying, hey, look, let's talk about NPT. There's no talk of that. There's only talk of the sanctions resolutions. And, of course, now coming up in between, IAEA report, the NIE, Solana's report, so on and so forth. But what could the world do with all these double standards from Israel to the nuclear deal between the U.S. and India, and all the double standards that we're witness to and Secretary Gates tried to defend?
Well, you know, the one answer is in the long history of attempts to enforce international law, there has been a distinction made between the so-called great powers and the lesser powers. The great powers do not feel that the law really pertains to them. And in the case of the United States and Iran, I say this as a you know a person who's a doctor in U.S. diplomatic history, is the United States has a long history of fixing certain people, certain regimes as enemies, and we pursue them until they cry, as we say, uncle. These speeches of Gates and his response to these very skeptical questions from his audience in Bahrain was he lost his temper. I would say basically that he made a fool of himself, because he is saying, just as Bush was saying to the Italian president who's visiting in Washington yesterday, yes, you know, we can't allow Iran to have what the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty allows them, a peaceful nuclear program they could run by themselves, because Iranians are no good. We don't trust them. I was at a meeting with Colin Powell's former aide, Colonel Larry Wilkerson, just a few days ago. The question of Iran came up, and he just threw his hands up. He said, no, you can't deal with Iranians. They'll tell you one thing one day and something else the next. This expression of distrust, dislike, most of it comes from the famous hostage crisis of 1979, but it's expressed throughout. The United States Congress, despite the 1981 Algiers Accord, which requires both countries not to interfere in the internal affairs of the other, Iran and the United States, several times now the Congress has passed regime change resolutions in the United States Congress and provided money, sometimes to Iranian exile groups, effectively, to encourage them to subvert the government there. I mean, this is like laughing in the face of international law, but it is, unhappily, a long-existing fact of international relations.
Well, let's take a look at the sanctions, the state of sanctions, as we speak. Here's an article from a Reuters. It says major powers fail to agree on Iran sanctions, U.S. Here's VOA with an article titled, Big Power Diplomats Discuss New Iran Sanctions. New York Times, the White House is confident of broad support on Iran. Times Online, report on Iran may scupper future sanctions. AFP, this out today, U.S. admits tactical differences with Russia, China on Iran. The Australian Iran report sets back sanctions. Now, Andrea Pershbo in London, what do you think literally, physically happens to sanctions?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that question?
What do you think happens to sanctions in light of all these new facts now on the ground with this new NIE and, of course, China and Russia harder to get on board?
Yeah. No, I mean, sanctions is going to be very difficult to discuss in the future. Just a month ago, I participated in a meeting where you had both Russian and Chinese delegates on a fairly senior level talking about the possibility of sanctions against Iran. And the Chinese in particular said, look, Iran is a very important partner, trading partner with us, and we want to proceed carefully. If that was their position prior to the estimate, well, you can only imagine what their position is now. The Russians, of course, they have their own agenda. They've always had their own agenda. What they are a bit upset about is the tendency of the Western group to characterize them as greedy Russians that are only interested in making the good buck rather than securing their borders against the emergence of potential nuclear weapon states. Now, that is not true. The Russians, in particular, are very worried about the prospect of a nuclear-armed Iran, because they are basically going to sit there on their southern flank. They have a direct interest in the same interest they have in the Caucasus, with large economic interests and stability interests as well. You have the entire conflict between Armenia and Azerbaijan brewing. So the Russians are taking this very seriously, but they are not convinced by the strength of the evidence, and frankly neither am I, because the agency is still conducting its investigations. Well, as I said previously, we'll see what happens when this work plan concludes. But until then, I think further pressure might possibly propel the Iranians to do more, but I don't think so. So the wise strategy would possibly be to wait, and I think that people in Moscow and Beijing are thinking the same.
All right, here's what Bush had to say just hours after the video conference between the U.S. and the actually 5+1 on Iran's nuclear sanctions. Bush demands Iran explain nuclear program. President Bush on Tuesday called on Iran to explain why it had a secretive nuclear weapons program and warned that any such efforts must not be allowed to flourish for the sake of world peace. Iran is dangerous, he said again. Bush said after an Oval Office meeting with Italian President Napolitano, he said, quote, "We believe Iran had a secret military weapons program and Iran must explain to the world why they had a program." This, of course, after Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad said, "We consider this measure by the U.S. government a positive step. It is a step forward." So, Azimian, we actually have, unfortunately, no time left. We'll definitely discuss this in coming programs as well. Unfortunately, we have to say goodbye. We're out of time. Our thanks to all our guests. We were joined from London by Andrea Perspo, Nuclear Law and Policy Research Center, Verdict, an independent non-governmental organization with mission to promote effective verification of a means of ensuring confidence in the implementation of international agreements. We're also joined from Washington by David McMichael, former CIA analyst, and from New York by Azim Mian, UN bureau chief for GOTV of Pakistan. Gentlemen, thank you for your time and views, and our thanks to our viewers for joining us. Always watch out for the fine print with me, Amir Afan.